Welcome to Your Calls One Planet series. I'm Ethan Elkind, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. The United States is facing an obesity crisis. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, obesity affects roughly 42% of U.S. adults. Since the 1980s, the rate has more than doubled here in this country, according to federal data. And a 2022 Lancet study estimated that nearly 500,000 Americans die early each year because of excess body weight. So Americans have turned to a variety of ways to lose weight, from drugs to diet to surgical options. But in parallel, for decades, anti-diet proponents have been fighting against weight bias and diet culture. The movement, now known as Health at Every Size, began in the 1960s as a grassroots effort in tandem with other civil rights movements to promote equal access to healthcare, trying to ease the burden of diet culture by fighting weight stigma and body shame. But a new investigation from the Washington Post and The Examination found that major food brands are now seeking to cash in on this anti-diet movement, all to promote ultra-processed foods laden with sweeteners and additives. And they're pushing their unhealthy products through dietitians with tens of thousands of followers on social media sites like TikTok and Instagram. So joining us to discuss this, we're very pleased to have Sasha Chavkin, senior reporter for The Examination, a nonprofit newsroom covering global public health. Sasha covers the food industry and specializes in cross-border investigations, as well as environmental and public health issues. Good to have you back, Sasha.
Thanks for having me, Ethan.
And we're also pleased to be joined by Caitlin Gilbert, is a Well Plus Being data reporter at The Washington Post. Good to have you back on the show, Caitlin.
Thanks for having me, Ethan.
So Caitlin and Sasha are the co-authors of As Obesity Rises, Big Food and Dietitians Push Anti-Diet Advice. Definitely want to recommend that to listeners. And thank you both for this important investigation. Sasha, let me start with you. How did you come across the story and the workings of the anti-diet industry?
Well, this story actually began with an investigation we did last fall into dietitians who were influencers on social media. And we found in that story that many dietitians online were being paid by food companies to promote their products and their messages, for example, defending the health and safety of certain kinds of foods. As a result of that first investigation, we found that there were a number of dietitians who were being paid by food companies and not properly disclosing their sponsorships. And when we looked a little further, we noticed that many of the dietitians who engaged in that behavior were members of the anti-diet movement. And that made us curious, and it made us want to look more closely. And that was kind of what gave birth to this second investigation that looked into the anti-diet movement and the food industry's efforts to co-opt its messages.
Well, it was wonderful to have you both back on, because we did have you both after that first piece came out. So it's really nice to see the evolution of your investigation into this industry and these practices. And Caitlin, to turn to you, for people who aren't familiar with the concept of the anti-diet philosophy, can you describe what that is?
Yeah, sure. So this is something, as you mentioned, is not new. It's been around for some time now, and it started really as a way to push back against the really toxic kind of principles and also sort of fad diets that centered losing weight quickly. People, I think, can all remember various named types of diets like Atkins diet, keto diet. Like these are still here today. And people, you know, generally like really have struggled with those types of diets. And so this anti-diet movement started as a way to push back against that. Also, this very sort of unhealthy perception with the way, you know, people's bodies look, and a healthy obsession with thinness. And so a lot of the anti-diet sort of ideas are centering this idea of trying to develop a healthier relationship with food. What we're seeing now, however, is people, particularly on social media, making very kind of blanket statements about food and nutrition attached to these ideas. So people talking about food freedom and the idea that there's no unhealthy or healthy foods, no good or bad foods. Junk foods should not be labeled as junk foods. Processed foods should be embraced. Ultra-processed foods should be embraced. So this sort of the evolution of these same ideas into the social media space.
And Caitlin, you're the data reporter. Can you talk about some of the data that you dug into to really highlight how the big food industry are using some of these influencers to get these messages out? What was the data crunching that you were doing? How did you access it?
Yeah, so this was, you know, as Sasha said, we started doing the same sort of work for the first story, but in taking sort of our universe of what was over 6,000 social media posts that we were pulling down from TikTok and Instagram that were being made by just dietitians in general who were influencers on the platform. So that means folks who had over 10,000 followers. Some of them, you know, have millions of followers. So there's a big range of kind of follower number there. Taking all of their posts for like about a year period, going through and analyzing and asking the question, how many of these folks are, you know, using anti-diet messaging? It's not every dietitian, right? It's about 40% we found. And then of those folks that were pushing anti-diet messaging, asking then the question, how many of these folks are doing sponsored content for food companies, beverage companies, supplement companies, what have you. And the majority of those groups, of that group was also doing that as well. So there was a clear sort of majority of folks who were working directly with the food companies to push different types of products and messages. And then sort of more specifically, we found specific campaigns. So General Mills specifically is the focus of our most recent investigation. And they, you know, did specific campaigns towards pushing this hashtag derail the shame, which follows this anti-diet kind of principle where, you know, you should not put foods, in their case, cereals, into the categories of good or bad, or something having processed ingredients as being good or bad. So yeah, that was sort of the broad overview of what we did with the data.
Well, it's certainly pretty shocking just to see how deep this goes. I mean, even 40% of these influencers essentially paid off by this food industry. And Sasha, I know you followed up with some of these people about their own experiences with the anti-diet movement. Can you describe what their experience was like as they talked to you?
So if you're talking about individuals who actually tried these approaches, as they struggled to figure out a healthy diet, we did speak in detail with several people. We focused on the story of a woman named Jay Rashawn, who is a video editor who lives in Wisconsin, who struggled with weight loss diets, you know, as so many people do. And then encountered these anti-diet influencers on YouTube who, again, you know, embraced this very extreme version of the movement. These ideas, for example, that any kind of food restriction is bad for you, that you should embrace your fear foods. That was another concept, that, you know, you shouldn't stay away from the foods that you're trying to avoid because you're worried you might binge on them. And when she followed this advice, she gained 50 pounds in a period of 2 months and eventually gained enough weight that she started to really worry about her health. And she spoke to us because she is concerned about other people who are continuing to encounter these messages online and doesn't want them to follow the same path that she did.
Well, and Sasha, is there any consequence to the industry for pushing some of these essentially false advertising messages? How is the industry regulated and how can they get away with this, given the impact it's having on some of the people that you spoke to?
Well, you know, the oversight of advertising is done by the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission. After the first story that we did about sponsorships, they sent out warning letters to two industry groups and about a dozen dietitians, basically threatening them with fines if they continued to post advertisements that didn't clearly disclose the relationship between the sponsor and the influencer. So one way that the industry is regulated is that they have to disclose when they're behind these kinds of messages. As far as, you know, whether they're allowed to work with dietitians, you know, whether they're allowed to promote messages or the dietitians promote messages that, you know, run counter to mainstream nutrition science, you know, that's a very different area. And that's not the kind of thing that the government could regulate in the same way. The anti-diet approach is also a valid movement. You know, these are real concerns in our society. So, you know, I think the idea that the government could stop someone from, you know, posting an anti-diet message, you know, I think would be very problematic. I think what is concerning and what we've gotten a lot of response to is the idea that food companies are using these ideas that are meant to protect people from weight discrimination, from eating disorders, from these really serious problems in our society to instead sell sugary cereals and processed foods. And we did get a lot of response both from readers and even from people within the anti-diet movement saying that they really were not comfortable with that.
So you're listening to Your Calls One Planet series. I'm Ethan Elkind sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and we're talking about the food industry taking advantage of the anti-diet movement, using influencers to push unhealthy food products on unsuspecting consumers. We're joined by Sasha Chavkin, senior reporter for The Examination, and Caitlin Gilbert, a Well Plus Being data reporter at The Washington Post. And we'd love to hear from you as well. Have you had any experience with some of these influencers and their messages? Are you concerned about what's going on with the co-option of this anti-diet movement? You can reach us at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email us with any questions or comments at yourcall@kalw.org. Caitlin, I wanted to follow up with you on your data research on online dietitians and these influencers that are being co-opted by the big food industry. And I'm wondering if you followed up with any of these dietitians, if you reached out to them, heard anything back, what were they saying, if anything, in response to what you're finding?
I think it's similar, you know, in the reporting process, we've talked to many, many dietitians at this point, kind of with a variety of perspectives on the anti-diet front. I think some people they self-identify as anti-diet dietitians, right? They will label themselves as such on social media as well, too. They write books about this idea, so they're very committed to these principles. And there are also dietitians who maybe aren't as online as those folks who are really concerned with what they see their peers doing on social media, particularly in making these sort of blanket statements about nutrition. And then on top of that, potentially also working with food companies like General Mills who are using this messaging to kind of push these products. So I think there's been definitely kind of a strong response to the story from both ends of the spectrum, folks who are very invested in the anti-diet idea and are, you know, very much a part of this universe, but then other folks who are really concerned about how anti-diet has become very mainstream in this sort of industry potentially led way within the dietetics field.
Sasha, I'm curious just to get a little bit of historical context on here. Do you have any sense as to when this sort of co-opting of the anti-diet movement really began? Is there any historical data, or did you hear anything in your reporting that would indicate when this trend started, really?
We don't have data on this question. You know, the core of our reporting was the data analysis that Caitlin did of recent posts by social media influencers. And then we looked in detail at this multi-pronged effort by General Mills to push anti-diet ideas. So she mentioned how they work with influencers who used derail the shame as a hashtag on posts promoting cereal. General Mills also sponsored a study into food shaming, which, you know, is a major concern of the anti-diet movement. This study by General Mills claimed that people who reported being food shamed were more likely to suffer mental health problems, were more likely to have lower self-esteem, and also were more likely to avoid the cereal aisle in grocery stores. And they really emphasized in a presentation they did at a conference we went to that they were trying to ignite this research. They claimed that there wasn't a lot of research in this area before, and they said that they really wanted to move the field forward. And then they used this study to oppose, for example, adding front of package labels to food products. They claimed that if you put a warning on the front of a package saying that a food is high in sugar or high in fat, that would be food shaming consumers. And so therefore they opposed it. But to go back to your original question, the anti-diet movement has been around a long time. The evidence that we looked at of the food industry co-opting it is much more recent and took place in just the last couple of years.
Yeah, I would also – I was just going to add to that data-wise, the 2019 to 2023 period that we looked at, just anti-diet, like as a topic within academic studies, that's also a really recent kind of explosion in popularity and mentions of even just the term anti-diet. So even just the kind of resurgence of this movement becoming more widely popular is also fairly recent too.
I appreciate insights into when this has started. Let's go to a caller. We have Dell dialing in from Berkeley. Dell, welcome to your call.
Hi, this is a great subject. I really appreciate this show. I have been watching these, you know, these influencers, and my biggest fear is they're saying that our food is poisoned. Our cereal is not allowed in other countries. Our milk is not allowed in other countries. Our chicken is not allowed in other countries. Why are we being allowed to be poisoned? And it's, you know, and there's influencers out there, you know, saying, hey, we're being poisoned.
Dell, I appreciate that you're
being poisoned.
No, Dell, I appreciate you raising this issue that you're coming across these kind of messages. So, Sasha, starting with you, any insights into these particular messages about unsafe foods in the U.S. not being allowed in other countries? What's your response to Dell?
Well, I can't speak to a specific example because I would need to know the facts. What I can say is that there is a lot of disinformation on social media on all sides. And that includes, people who go on TikTok and post videos in the supermarket of themselves pointing at products and saying this is going to kill you if you eat it. You know, there's this stuff about seed oils and how they're going to destroy people's health that is not at all backed by, you know, what nutrition science says. So I think that it's important to keep in mind that disinformation or information that runs counter to nutrition science comes from all angles. And in fact, many of the dietitians who we spoke to who are on social media said one of the main reasons that they did so was in order to counter some of the disinformation and the food fears that they were seeing and that their clients reported experiencing to them. So again, I can't talk about a particular post that you've said, but I would encourage you to have some skepticism about people making incredibly dramatic claims about common products being unsafe or being poisoned, because there's a lot of that kind of information on social media as well that is not accurate at all.
Well, it unfortunately applies to much more than just this topic, although definitely true for this one. Caitlin, just wanted to check with you to see if you happen to be familiar with this particular message that Dell is referencing, or if you have any advice for how people can fact check stuff that they might find online.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with Sasha. It's tough because I think in general, when you see a message that is making some kind of a blanket statement about nutrition or foods, it's good to just at first pass be skeptical because it's hard to make any kind of blanket statements about nutrition and food, especially on social media. One thing I would say, though, is, you know, when in talking to physicians and also dietitians who study kind of nutrition science and also how it interplays with chronic diseases like liver disease, diabetes, the other conditions like that, they really do generally point to the deteriorating kind of food supply in the U.S. As a main sort of problem for a long time, right? So this is not to say that like our food is poison, but there generally aren't as many regulations around food, food companies, things like front of pack labeling in the U.S. compared to many other countries. So I think that is a real thing that is happening in the U.S.
Well, thank you, Del, for that call. We're talking about how the big food industry is co-opting the anti-diet movement to sell unhealthy products to people who are otherwise unsuspecting through influencer on social media messaging. We're joined by Sasha Chavkin, senior reporter for The Examination, and Caitlin Gilbert, the Well Plus Being data reporter at The Washington Post. Sasha, I wanted to ask you about how Ozempic might be factoring into this discussion and drugs like it. It's a weight loss drug that is otherwise upending the $75 billion diet industry, because now it seems people can take pills to lose weight and maybe don't have to depend on healthy food and exercise, the traditional way to approach dieting. So Sasha, what's your take on how Ozempic and other weight loss drugs are factoring in here?
Well, this wasn't a topic we examined in our story, but one thing that I think is notable is that many people in the anti-diet movement are concerned with the potential of those drugs for further mainstreaming unhealthy ideas about body image and food and, you know, quote unquote, need to be thin in order to be socially acceptable. So, you know, we haven't looked at the science behind those drugs or, you know, where that stands. But I think that it is a consideration where this fits into our cultural beliefs about weight and body image, as compared to the potential for those drugs to actually, you know, improve health outcomes for some people. And I think that's a debate that is still ongoing, but that is raising many of the same concerns that previous types of diet culture, like Weight Watchers or the keto or Atkins or fad diets, raised in previous generations.
And Caitlin, when you were looking at the data of what's going on online, did Ozempic come into play here and drugs like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen it just more anecdotally being mentioned and talked about just because it is so new. And this is obviously something that's actually being discussed on these platforms. I will say actually sort of, this is very recent. This is not even within a reporting, but I did see TikTok in particular did come out with new rules about discussions around these drugs, these GLP-based drugs. You can't sell any kind of supplement or medication or promote use of these products. And a lot of times when you search for these words on something like TikTok, you will be kind of redirected to advice about eating disorders and navigating weight in a healthy way. So TikTok is definitely sort of clamping down on that conversation. But no, I mean, when we looked kind of through the database for anti-diet influencers, we did not look specifically for mentions of stuff like Ozempic or Wegovy.
So just kind of going forward from this, what are the options here? First of all, for people who want to lose weight, what is now the sort of the standard line here? Can we have any confidence in the anti-diet movement? And then secondly, for these companies that are essentially able to get away with what often amounts to some pretty harmful messaging to people, what could be done to address that issue? And Sasha, I'll start with you, and then Caitlin would love to hear your take as well.
Sure. Well, I think that many of the central concerns of the anti-diet movement, you know, that heavier people should not face discrimination, that it is not required for everyone to have a certain body type, are entirely valid and are as valid as ever in the present day. What we did see, though, is that some anti-diet influencers went beyond that and made claims that are not consistent with nutrition science. Some disputed the health risks associated with obesity. Some even claimed that diseases like type 2 diabetes and heart disease were not caused by excess weight, but instead by dieting or by weight stigma. And those kinds of claims are not supported by nutrition science. So I think that insofar as the anti-diet movement is pushing back on weight stigma and unhealthy food fixations, it has an important message. I think when it goes beyond nutrition science to dispute scientific concerns about obesity and its connection to chronic diseases, that is where listeners should start to be concerned and, you know, should look for information that is more consistent with nutrition science.
Absolutely. That's what's so harmful about this, right? There's some positive messages there, but when it gets co-opted into harmful messages, that's when we have a real problem. And Caitlin, just to end with you on this, what are your thoughts about next steps? What could be done? What people should be thinking about? And can we take action against the deceptive practices that we're seeing here?
Yeah, I think from the food industry perspective here, Sasha mentioned, you know, them pushing back against front of package labeling. This is one kind of sliver of regulation that could potentially exist to change how foods label are labeled in this country at a time when many other countries have much clearer and more concise information about things like added sugars, excess sodium, saturated fats. That these types of, you know, basic kind of like common sense categories of food are things that the food industry is now really pushing back against and saying, oh, well, we can't label foods as being high or low in something, in part because everyone is different. And how can we even say high or low for any one person? And again, co-opting that anti-diet language. And so I think people realizing that this is something that is preventing maybe more common sense regulation, that is something that I know the FDA and legislators in Congress have been working on for a very, very long time now, is important, because this is potentially, you know, one step to improve that information. One of the physicians I spoke to, you know, he said, in working with people, many of whom are children who are navigating serious diseases like fatty liver disease, which is on the rise in the U.S., unfortunately, is not to shame anyone about their individual behavior. It's to give them information about how to navigate an environment, in a food environment, that can be so sort of polluted with various not nutritious elements. And so I think that is an important sort of message from our reporting going forward.
Absolutely. Well, I just want to thank you both for following the story, for your great investigative work here. The article is "As Obesity Rises, Big Food and Dietitians Push Anti-Diet Advice" on the Examination and the Washington Post. And thank you both so much, Sasha Chofkin, senior reporter for the Examination, Caitlin Gilbert, Wellplus Bing data reporter at the Washington Post. Thank you also for joining us here on Your Calls One Planet series.
Thanks, Ethan.
Thanks, Ethan.
And coming up next, we're going to be talking about a deal to sell Colorado River water 200 miles away to Phoenix. So stay with us after this break.